Hi, this is T. Morris of Moravi Remastered. You can find out more about that production at www.moravi.net. And you're listening to Buffy Between the Lines. But something tells me Spike may not be listening to this podcast because he is, in five words or less, out for a walk. Bitch.
Hello, hi, welcome. I am Mark the Encaffeinated One, and I am thrilled to death, to undeath, back from death, and with a soul, and enjoying every second of it. I am with three of the people who are involved in Buffy Between the Lines. This is the episode commentary on number 5. She's more than that, and I think all these people are more than that. I am joined by Nick, who plays Spike and also does some editing behind the scenes. Say hello, Nick.
Hi there. I'm Spike.
I think everybody will recognize that voice. We are also joined by Carolyn, who is the guest star in this episode, play the social worker, Barbara Young. Say hello, Carolyn.
Hi, podcast land.
And last, but certainly never, ever least, I am also joined by Chris, who plays a little-known character, and he does his best. He plays that guy named Xander, I think it is. Say hello, Chris.
Hello, Chris.
I knew that was a setup.
Yeah, bad joke, I know.
And welcome to you all. I got to say, this is the second time I've had an opportunity to do one of these round tables, commentaries, whatever you want to call them. And I'm really, really enjoying the series so far. And I got to say, it's thrilling me to hear each of these, and it thrills me to get a chance to talk with you guys behind the scenes and see what actually is going on. Well, let's see. I've got to deal with the elephant in the room, first of all. When I saw who I was going to have an opportunity to edit here, or to talk to here, I got to say, I was quite thrilled. And I got to deal with the elephant in the room. Chris, did you happen to come out of some sort of cloning vat, or how is it that you have this incredibly good Xander? Have you been told this your entire life, that you are Xander?
No, actually, this is really a surprise to me. I mean, I kind of, like, when I was in high school, my junior year, I started watching Buffy, and my junior year was, like, the third season, so they were in their senior year, whatever, and I really like Xander. You know, I caught up on the older episodes, and his humor kind of fit with mine. I'm a sarcastic, cynical dork, and I just sort of threw that out there a lot. I never really thought that I sounded like him. A couple of times I blatantly ripped off a line and nobody else noticed because nobody was as big a dork as I was. And then, you know, I went on to keep watching the series. I stopped imitating him so much. But, you know, I saw the little ad on Waden.info to do the auditions, and I figured, what the hell? And I tried out for Xander and Jonathan and Warren and the other nerd, Andrew, and some other bit parts, and I figured, yeah, you know, maybe I'll get Andrew, because I really liked the line about Bantha fodder or something, and I was like, this will be a lot of fun, and they came back and said, read for Angel and a couple of these other lines, and Javert, and lots of stuff, and they didn't say anything about Xander, and I was like, okay, and then a couple of days later, she's like, okay, we want you to be Xander, and I was like, really? Oh, well, okay. And here I am. And then people started saying, you sound exactly like him. And I don't get it. I really don't think I sound exactly like him. Like, I just...
Have you been receiving a lot of feedback since it started then, saying, you know, exactly what I said? How could you possibly not have realized this? Or
yeah, a lot of people seem to be saying that. And the thing is, I've... Like, my friends that know me in real life that are also Buffy fans, I've forced them to listen to this. And they pretty much all said the same thing. They're like, yeah, Chris, you know, you sound fine for the part, but you don't sound just like him. I mean, there are some other people in there that sound just like their part, like Tara and Dawn, and I feel like a jerk because I can't remember their real names or their internet pseudonames. But, yeah, I'm a little flabbergasted that so many people seem to think that I'm a clone, because I'm not a clone. I'm unique, damn it.
Well, I think both you and Xander are unique in your own ways, but I think that you do bring a lot to that role. If not just the voice, I think you've got the delivery more than anything else down very, very well. And I think that carries, even where your voice may have some differences from the original actors. But I've got to deal with the other elephant in the room, and that is one of the other major characters of this, which is Spike.
You're talking about me.
Nick, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job with Spike. Did you try out initially for Spike? Was that what you really went for, or were you just going to be an editor?
Tabs contacted me first, I guess from hearing stuff on the Signal. And suggested that I try out for Tabs and maybe some of the other English ones. So I actually did try it for Spike and for Ethan and for Giles as well. But I think her and Kim got together fairly quickly and decided, no, we'll go with Spike. So we have an English guy for Spike and an American guy for Giles. So there you go. So I was quite... Well, this is it. We want to be slightly different, so just do it the other way around this time. And I was fairly gobsmacked and quite, I guess, flattered. I really didn't think, oh, you know, gosh, Spike. That's a bloody tough task, isn't it? You know.
Well, you're doing a good job of it as well. And I think you do have some more differences from the Spike voice, voiced by, I believe he's a Texan. But I think you've carried the attitude very well, and that also...
This is definitely what I was told. They were looking for someone... obviously, if they can get people who do sound at least somewhat similar to the characters, the actors, then great, that's a bonus. But it's the attitude, it's the character that's important, not necessarily the actor portraying it. And the writing is good enough that it makes our job relatively easy in a way, because the deliveries, that the voice of the character is there on the paper in front of you, and you're just kind of delivering it. But the attitude. I mean, obviously, I don't sound like James Masters, who does an astonishing English accent. Very, very few flubs, about one a season, I think. If you analysed it really, really carefully,
I've wanted to ask an Englishman actually about that, because here in North America we kind of think he's sounding like some sort of Englishman, but is it consistent enough to really be a proper accent?
I thought he was English. I was absolutely stunned when I found... What do you mean he's American? I was amazed, honestly. The accent is extremely good. It's very accurate. It's very close. There's just a couple of minor... I couldn't name one for you, I'll be honest. I know probably if you go on the forums, in-depth analysis of all of the actual linguistic characteristics of the delivery, but it's so well written, obviously, because it's Joss, and James Masters is such a good actor. It comes over as completely genuine. When you've got other actors around them, you know, I mean, like Juliet Landau as Drew. I mean, that's another great performance as well.
I got to say, too, yours is very convincing, you know, and I'm quite
impressed. He's been working on it for years.
That's right, as long as I've been alive.
almost all of his life, really, yeah. Now, going around the table, Carolyn, now these two obviously have had a lot more longer-term experience with the show itself and actually are continuing on characters, but you play a very different role in this episode. You are the guest star. You come in, I believe, just for this episode. How was it coming into this kind of atmosphere? Did you have a chance to kind of hang around with everybody and get involved, or did you kind of fly in and put your... famous banner on the front?
Oh, definitely. I mean, if there's one thing I do well, it's having a professional speaking voice. I mean, most of the stuff I do on the Signal, I'm not talking like I am with you. I make it a little bit fancier. I do a lot of phone calls at work. So, you know, I brought kind of that professionalism to it, where, you know, Chris is good at being the just after college guy as Xander, and Nick is good at being English. I kind of bring the, you know, I'm a professional of some sort, and I kind of bring that, you know, office experience to it.
Well, this brings me to another question now, where Carolyn used her personal experience and all this to bring to the role. Nick, did you What did you do to become Spike?
Oh, gosh. I went and watched some of the season 5 scenes with Spike in. I've got the videos, DVDs. You can also look at stuff on YouTube, of course, which is handy if you just need like a clip to kind of get in the right mood for something, I suppose. But most of the time, it's there on the page. You know, if you're a fan of Buffy, you have watched the season multiple times, and I certainly have, and you're familiar with the character, and you want to get it right, because a lot of people are familiar with the character, very familiar with the character. And luckily, the writing is good enough that it's very rare that I think, no, he wouldn't say that. I might change the odd thing, I might insert the odd love or bloody or whatever, just to give it that slightly, I guess, more genuine Englishness to it. But it's really only very minor ad libs. It's pretty much read as what's written. Is that a sentence?
Did you find it? Well, obviously, we're glad that we have the writers involved.
Oh, God, yeah.
Did you find it difficult playing what is really a dual character? Because we have Spike as the human, but he's also this demon, and the demonoid form comes out once in a while, and the voice changes, attitude changes a bit. Was that hard for you, or was that, again,
that
the
writing?
That
was quite challenging, yeah. It's actually somewhat easier to do angry Spike, angry, demonic, evil, nasty Spike. Because you just kind of go, you get your grr on, and that's not so hard. It's doing him in more quiet, reflective moments. That's when I find myself going back and listening to a couple of clips, just to try and something, not nail the tone necessarily, but the pacing and the delivery, I suppose. So I guess we all do try to do that, and with I hope some success.
Do you whip out some plastic fangs and put those in to get the proper
mouth
problems?
It sounds like this, and no one can understand a bloody word that I'm saying. So that doesn't work, obviously. I don't go all bumpy, and there's method acting, and there's method acting, or there's just acting. And
you don't hit your head a few times just to raise a few.
I have beaten myself
bumps.
Up.
I suppose it'd be hard to switch back
up for the fight scenes. I have beaten myself up a few times, I suppose.
So were you doing, now there's a question, fight scenes, are you doing all of the each individual grunt and angry punch and swing, or is that something where it's kind of in post they collect a lot of these things together, or do you add special effects instead?
I guess it's a mixture. I've obviously you kind of hear your own you listen through your own take when you do it, and if it's a solo take, and maybe clean up the sound quality a little, and pretty much send it off as is, with very little trimming, because they like to have some of the bloopers, you may have noticed.
Yes.
But when I'm reading it, if Spike grunts in pain, I'll go, because it's part of the sequence of it, and you need to get the pace. And this is where the group recordings come in. Although the stuff's double ended, and they're all pasted, end up being pasted together individually, because you're recording as a group, you bounce off each other, you get the energy in that, and that certainly helps. But I think we're pretty good actually at making it hard to tell which ones are done in a group and which ones are done solo. So yeah, you do read the effects, you do read the grunts and the growls and all the rest of it to add stuff to it, and that can all be edited out and put in some stock sounds of thumping or chairs breaking overheads or whatever, because obviously you can't do all of it. But I think it works.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. Now, Chris, when you're doing Xander, do you naturally drop into his pattern now? I mean, you've done several episodes. Well, actually, you've recorded them all now, I suppose. But after a few episodes were done, did you find that you could naturally drop into that? And did you find yourself ad-libbing at all, or did you stick straight to the script?
Well, I would do a read-through, just straight to the script. There were a couple of times where I was like, that's worded weird. I have to reword that a little bit. I try to make my changes small, and every once in a while I'll throw in a little something that seems funny to me. I don't know that any of those have gotten through yet. But maybe someday they will. As for, you know, falling into the rhythm of talking like Xander, I suppose I do. It was a pretty easy rhythm for me to get along with, to begin with. So, yes, by now it's much easier.
Thinking of editing and putting all this all together, Nick, you're one of the editors?
Yeah, one of quite a few, actually. There's a sort of team of us that do varying numbers of scenes. Same, so I'll do maybe two or three scenes per episode, perhaps.
So it's split up by scene. Then.
It's split up by scene. Yeah, I think it's to be honest, with a project of this magnitude and with the turnaround that we've got, you have to do it that way. And the organisation has, to be honest, worked very well, I think, on the whole. Apart from minor glitches, which you don't get in any project, but you know, I think we're far enough ahead of ourselves that that there's not going to be any interruption in any of the release schedules for the episodes. Sometimes we'll just do like the basic editing and literally just stitching the dialogue together. You've got the script in front of you, and you have the two takes from say two actors or three actors, and you just interleave each of the lines in an editing program like Audacity. So you've got like three tracks, and you just arrange the spacing and pick the best delivery of each particular line and stitch it all together. It sounds quite complicated and it can be painstaking, especially when the damn program crashes on you. And you learn to save a lot. It works quite well, I think. I've lost my thread completely.
Now, when you're doing an episode. Now, obviously, you said that many editors work on a single episode.
Yes.
Do you communicate back and forth to try to get the consistency right?
Not so much. I think not so much at the moment. I mean, what happens is we do all our editing, and then Tabs or Kim or Clay, and there may be one or two other people that kind of like do the master editing. These are people who've got a lot more experience at sound editing, perhaps, than some of the team that are just doing the basic stitching together. That's actually putting the episode together, so that's actually putting all the scenes in, making sure the spacing's right, adding special effects, sort of, you know, nighttime sounds, morning sounds, traffic sounds, whatever, that maybe aren't necessarily there in the plain dialogue, or provided by the editors, because we don't necessarily have access to those sound effects. So between editors...
Well, so you're really just stitching... You're just stitching the dialogue together.
Most of the editing team, I think, it's stitching the dialogue, and then that gets passed on to more experienced editors who actually put in any sound effects that are needed. With some scenes, obviously, they're not, because it's just plain dialogue, or you know, you can add sound effects as you go, almost like with the, you know, I mean, Spike drinking. That's fine. I can just sit here with a glass and just rattle it in front of the microphone. So that's kind of recorded as part of my recording session. But other stuff will have to be added sort of kind of post-production. But between the individual editors, if there had to be a lot of collaboration backwards and forwards, we'd never get anything done. So it all goes into more senior editors. If there's a problem, they'll come back to us and say, can you redo that or rejig that sound file? But to be honest, that hasn't happened very much. I think we're working...
How long does it take to edit a scene? Like, is there a time per page or...?
Okay, 1.5 minutes of dialogue takes me 3 to 4 hours.
Wow. It's
as a rule.
It's those kind of numbers, I think, that give people who are listening a good sense of how much work is done.
I'll just give you one example. If you listen to The Signal, you've heard Badger's World, which I'm involved with, and Jill edits that, and that takes her about 7 hours, and that's a 4 or 5 minute episode. And that takes, but that's full audio drama with all the sound effects and all the background and top and tailing and all the rest of it. But that takes her about 6 to 7 hours.
Wow, that's I think people need to, I think, can appreciate the show even more by knowing just how much effort goes in. And obviously, this is all volunteer time. This is a bunch of people who do it because they love this product. And do you get the script ahead of time? Do you look at that when you're... Do you know if you're going to be editing something ahead of time, or is it after it's been recorded?
No. We get the script reasonably well in advance. We've got an Excel sheet which shows us, you know, who's recording what with whom. If they're doing a group recording, who's the director's going to be? who's responsible for the editing of that scene, and what the due dates are as well, for both getting the bass recordings in and for the editing to be done as well. So, and that's updated on a rolling schedule, obviously, as the scripts are approved and go out to be recorded. So, I mean, episode 4 was released today, as we record this, but we're, I think, still in the process of recording episodes 9 and 10 at the moment. So we're quite a long way ahead, but it needs that lead time, because obviously there's an awful lot of editing and post-production and polishing, and then we've got to get it to Austin, who's the composer, to do the music, and that's kind of like the last thing that happens. So even with that lead time, things can sometimes get quite tight.
Yeah, you probably get some pretty nasty deadlines. I'm sure Tabs is emailing, phoning, and or messaging you as much as she can.
Sometimes. We try to be up to. I mean, we have a crew. One of the crew roles is basically to manage this, to keep on top of what's been done, what's been recorded, when it's been recorded, and to give the nudge to anyone that's perhaps not remembered to record something, or for something that needs to be redone, perhaps because there was a sound problem or something. Yeah. So that's one of the crew roles, is to kind of try and keep on top of that, because obviously you can't expect Tabs and Kim to do absolutely everything, although they're very good at doing it.
Well, we've talked a bit about just how big this effort is. Now, Carolyn, you're involved in other things as well, other podcasts as well, is that right?
Yep, I do The Signal with Nick, which I do a lot of writing and voice work for them. Usually reading what I've written. I do a Big Damn Test Kitchen, which is I go through the Big Damn Chef's cookbook and try out the recipes. And then I'll do the occasional sci-fi review and Serenity Speculation.
So you really couldn't have had a bigger part in this, because you're way too busy as it is.
Well, The Signal works a lot like Buffy Between the Lines does, where everything is into fairly small, manageable chunks. So there's usually time to get it all done, but I would have made time. But I'm actually very happy with the part I got, because I know it would have been a lot of work to have a larger part. I don't know how Chris, Nick, or Brian, or even Tabs, how they do it all.
Yeah, I pretty much do.
We definitely salute them.
We have no lives.
Yeah. You certainly have a life, because you're certainly contributing to something which is definitely worthwhile, and I would call that a life, if nothing else. Now, are we going to see a return of Barbara Young, Carolyn, or is this the one chance?
I'm not sure. I'm not the hugest Buffy fan in the world, so I'm not as familiar with the timeline as some people, and I'm not sure if there's going to be another opportunity for a social worker to show up, because I know season 6, when Buffy comes back, spoiler alert, that she's got some issues dealing with things, and that there is some threat that they may take Dawn away. But I don't know if that's fully resolved by the end of season 6. If it is, then there would be no need for me between season 6 and 7. Now, me as a voice actor, I will definitely put myself in for being available for any bit part that needs to come up for next year. And since I do writing for The Signal, I'll see, maybe I'll submit my name to write a script or submit a sample. Right now is the process of getting some of that together for Buffy Between the Lines second season, and I have not had, with the holidays coming up, I haven't had as much time as I would like to look at that, but right now they're recruiting for the next season for voice talent, for writing, that sort of thing. So I would certainly like to be involved. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, editors. We need editors.
Oh, well.
Sound editors, please.
Like script editors or like audio editors?
Script editors, sound editors. If you look at BetweenTheLinesStudios.com, there's a big damn list of all the crew roles that we want to fill for season 2. I mean, obviously people can have more than one crew role, because certain things don't take up that much of your time. But there's certainly, if anyone wants to get involved, go and check BetweenTheLines.com.
Right.
Yeah, BetweenTheLinesStudios.com. So, yeah, script editing. Sorry, BetweenTheLinesStudios.com.
Yeah, script editor is something that I would definitely be interested in. I have been working with Jill Arroway, who who I work with on The Signal, with her podcast, Drama Dark Places. It's in pre-production right now, but the script is done, and she's in the process of converting the script into a dramatic form, you know, a play form, from a book to an audio drama. And I've been helping her with that, so I certainly have the experience. That would be fun.
And it's been good experience as well. I mean, I'm involved with Dark Places as well, only bit parts at the moment, but I think I've got more stuff coming up in later episodes. But yeah, the certainly script editing, sound editing, street team, the bloggers, people to help with publicity, acting, of course, because there's going to be a whole load of new roles to come up in season two. So, yeah, go and check it out.
Yeah, I kind of bugged Tabs to see if I could help out a bit, and this is where these hosting bits come from. But I'm hoping that I might be able to play a different role, maybe even get my voice heard somewhere out
there.
Well,
you have good radio, you know, very baritone voice. I'm sure they'd find a place for you somewhere.
I can
Absolutely.
Keep bugging Tabs on Twitter until she gives me something. Maybe a news reporter in the background. Now, I've already heard from Carolyn. You said more things you're going to do. And Nick, you, of course, you're involved in many things already, and you're obviously going to continue with this. But Chris, is this your first acting gig? Or is this something you just have already been established as a career?
Not unless you count the High School Musical. Not unless you count high school plays and musical. And I really enjoyed doing that in high school, you know, the theater and drama. All that stuff. I wasn't quite one of the drama nerds, but I hung out with them from time to time. But then I went to college, and I heard that it was a lot of work there, so I just didn't do it. And then I graduated from college, and I worked a couple of crappy little jobs. And I moved out to D.C., where the job market is supposedly better, which I suppose it is, because now I'm making middle-class income.
Woo-hoo!
Yay! But there were about 7 months there where I wasn't doing anything. And I was getting a little bored, a little crazy, a little stir-crazy, and I thought about all the things I can do with my time, and, well, I just saw the little ad for voice acting auditions, and I was like, hey, why the hell not? And so I did.
Well, now that you've done it, and I think you've received a very positive response, you think you're going to do more of these beyond just the Buffy Between the Lines?
I think I just might. It kind of makes me curious, you know, what needs to be done to get out there and really do this, like, professionally or semi-professionally. I mean, I can pull down a regular job and do this on the weekends. But yeah, I wouldn't mind doing
more. Between the Lines will make a very nice impact on your resume there. I also have another pang of hope, because you mentioned that you've done some musical theater in the past, so I'm hoping we'll see in a more musical Buffy, perhaps, or the legendary possible musical Angel episode with a crossover from Xander.
You know, I'm sure that would be a lot of fun to do, like maybe on a stage, you know, a little live sort of reading thing. But as Nick told you, it's really time consuming to just put together spoken dialogue and a couple of little sound effects. I don't think we can really do a musical when we're spread out across the world, and
it would be a challenge.
Well, I think
That would be a lot of fun.
Maybe next year, or the
but that
or
would require
maybe
our
the
summer.
Next year or the year after, when you have the Buffy Between the Lines convention. where all of you are gathered in one place, and they have a stage and 5,000 to 10,000 people in the audience, just to give you a bit more scare. I think maybe then the Buffy Between the Lines live musical can go in. But until then, I think we're going to be contented, and as I know I am, with some very excellent episodes. I can't believe this is only the fifth episode I've had a chance to hear. It feels like I've already heard half of a season. I mean, in terms of 13 episodes, the characters have all grown very close to me. I now can easily pick out the voices. The first episode, it was a little rough because it was getting adjusted to new voices. But I got to say, and I'm glad I have this opportunity to speak directly to you guys, you've done an excellent job, and you're doing an excellent job, and I don't want to see it ever stop. And it's going to get difficult eventually, because you're going to run out of interstitial seasons to do.
Seasons to be between.
Yeah, but, it's a finite number of in-betweens.
But hopefully, maybe it might be something where later on it becomes fan fiction, or becomes singular episodes that could take place at any point within the entire series, perhaps, or some other way of extending out this idea. But I just want to thank you all. Nick? You have something to say or something to add?
Well, I was going to say the Halloween episode actually did, in fact, take place during season 5. The Halloween special episode.
That's right.
Because in season 5 they didn't actually do a Halloween episode.
I can't remember the actual episodes it takes place between, but it is set actually within season 5 itself, not between the seasons.
Well, there you go. We have a precedent.
There's always possibilities.
That's. I look forward to it. I have something to dream again. But I just want to say thank you to all three of you. We're about the half-hour mark, and I've really enjoyed it. I hope you've learned something about each other, and I certainly think that anyone listening and anyone who's a fan of the show appreciates everything you guys have done. So thanks again to Carolyn.
Thank you, Mark. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks to Nick.
Thanks, Mark. This has been great.
And thanks very much to Chris.
Thank you. Had a good time.
And keep listening for more Buffy Between the Lines on your Near My Podcatcher.
Yay!
And that will wrap it.
Hi.
Entered the twisted mind of Scott Sigler. You've descended into the inner darkness of Phil Rossi. Now, journey into the imagination of T. Morris. This is Moravi Remastered, the world's first podcast novel reimagined with a new soundtrack, restored scenes, and the voice talents of Leanne Mabry, Christiana Ellis, Philippa Ballantyne, and George Harab. And the podcast continues in the fall of 2008 with Legacy of Moravi. And in 2009 with an original podcast anthology, The Dragon Clan of Moravi. A project so sweeping in scope. An adventure so epic in scale. It takes two ballsy voiceover professionals to cut the promo. Moravi Remastered. Pirates. Ninjas. And one hell of a good time. Subscribe at www.moravi.net. And enjoy the ride.
And well, I lost my question there. Have to edit that part out.
Uh-oh.
Can't make any mistakes.
You fail.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know if you heard the previous one.